I will continue on the same topics, but I'm afraid I'm going to ruin a bit the magic. In the title, you know, you see there is a lang here, a lang in the back of the nine. So it's why there is no lang in the title of the seminar. It's because, in fact, we are trying to do is to extend the picture, to see a larger landscape than especially the lang, and to as a physicist to explore the whole possibilities of hydrodynamic trees, and to understand what are universal properties in these trees, and what can be applied to the lung. So obviously, at the end, we have this this concern of the lung as in the back of the mind, but we are doing things that are totally non-physiological from time to time, simply to see if the properties that we are seeing are robust or not. So you will see trees that are not at all like lung, and so for the biologists, don't leave the room. Well, don't scream when you see some trees. You will see that we are extending the landscape of exploration. Okay, so the laboratory is located at École Polytechnique. So since everybody was showing the picture of his laboratory, I'm showing the picture of my laboratory. We are there. So this work has been done in close collaboration with Professor Weibel, and also a team from the University of Port Fortaleza, José Soares Andrade, and with the work that I'm going to present. Part of the work has been done with a PhD student, supervised both by me and José. And Benjamin was a former PhD student, and Magali Florent is currently a graduate student, and she's going to start a PhD next year with us. Okay, so this I can skip, thanks to Bernard. So you see that we have a complex structure, which looks very much like a dichotomous branching tree. So I go immediately to the next step. What is this? We can ask the general question of is this an optimal airway system? And when you ask the question, the first thing that you have to ask is, what does mean optimal? Optimal means nothing if you don't see, if you don't ask with respect to what. Optimal, so generally speaking, optimality is linked when when somebody says optimal in general, means usually, and especially for a physicist, with respect to the energy dissipation. But, and it will be the conclusion of my talk, so I give immediately the conclusion of my talk for those who won't believe. Energy dissipation is one of the many concerns of biological systems. So trying to establish a rule based only on that, in my opinion, is hopeless, or meaningless at least. But essentially, it's one of the dimensions that you need to take into account for your system. So optimal, what does it mean optimal for the lung, for example? So you want the oxygen to access easily the acinar region, the region where the transfer between air and blood will be achieved. So what you want is a low hydrodynamic resistance. This is linked to energy dissipation, and that is exactly what Bernard showed for the bronchial tree. Also, the performance must be robust with respect to the physiological variability. That means that you have to have limited fluctuation of your performance around your structure. And it's a little bit different from what Bernard showed to you. It doesn't, in the previous talk, what was shown was performance of symmetric or asymmetric branching tree, but with exact structure. What I'm going to show you is that if you take one structure and you start to play a bit around the given structure, the fluctuation that you can induce can vary a lot depending on the structure you start from. Also, you open, let's say, roughly 100 square meters of surface of exchange between air, means the outside world, and your blood with a membrane which is roughly 1 micron width. So what you want to do is to oxygen to access this region, but you don't want many other particles or things, unwanted particle to access this region. You have 100 square meter. So somehow you want to filter this access. So that is a very big concern at the moment. It's not just simply energy dissipation. If you want to minimize energy dissipation, you open a hole like this, and you will minimize energy dissipation. You want to filter the access. And also, and that was also mentioned by Bernard at the end of this talk, you want to access the region in a finite time. Because when you look at energy dissipation, you are looking basically at a stationary process. But you have a pulsative process, and you have at rest, you have 2 seconds. The inspiration cycle is a period 5 seconds, and you have 2 seconds of inspiration, and you want to access this region within 2 seconds. So that some constraint. So it more or less it's a. I will show you several constraints that are not all the constraints that you can think of, but we will see what this kind of constraint can put on the can do on the structure. So the self similarity of the tracheobronchial tree is well known, since a famous work from Professor Weibel, and you have this kind of plot where you have you plot the average diameter versus the generation. And you see in log plot that you have an exponential decay, geometrical decay of the diameter. So you put this line, and this line corresponds to d naught times 2 to the power minus z over 3, where z is the generation number, means that you have a scaling factor which corresponds to this magic number, to the power minus 1/3. Okay, but if you look very carefully, I will go through this very fast because Bernard told about this. Also, can be explained and has been explained before by Murray and Hess as a minimum of energy, viscous energy dissipation within a finite volume. So, for a symmetric tree, you find this 2^-1/3. But if you look very closely to this curve, to this plot, what you see is that this is not exactly a straight line. More, you have something like this in the upper part, and something like that in the intermediate tracheobronchial tree. So it's not at all some kind of measurement fluctuation. It seems to be very clear, and it's so clear that in fact this small slope, which corresponds to a parameter which is higher than 2^-1/3, in this intermediate region of the tracheobronchial tree, correspond to this plot that Bernard also showed you, which is the scaling factor in the intermediate region from generation 6 to 16. You have this, we are in this region, and so it corresponds to this plot. It means that here in the entrance part of your system, you have something that corresponds to a scaling factor which is much smaller than this 0.79. Which would be the magical tree, and which would be the very high resistive tree. And here you have something which is much further than 0.79. So the question is there something that we can explain, we can do to explain that, or is this something which is due to purely to evolution? So let's start with the hydrodynamic resistance. So I go, also Bernard explained that very well. I have just one word about, you asked about the Poiseuille resistance. In fact, there is several things in the Poiseuille approximation. The one thing is that the parabolic flow, the exact flow, which is the exact shape and all the properties of the Poiseuille flow, that is one thing. The other thing is simply the dependence of the resistance, which will be more or less that this power 4 of the resistance, which would be proportional to the length and inversely proportional to the power 4 of the radius, and which will scale like this h^3. If you don't have exactly Poiseuille flow, maybe what you will have is you can change a bit this formula. But essentially, the essential feature that we are looking when using Poiseuille flow is that we have a rough estimate of the resistance and how it scales with the size. And you don't need to have the exact parabolic flow to have this. So that's because every time we say Poiseuille, we can have, and it's rightful to say, no, it's not Poiseuille. Poiseuille needs a certain time to be reached. But if you measure the resistance of its bronchia, in fact, the estimate is good by Poiseuille, and especially the scaling is the correct one. So resistance of one bronchia, you have this formula. Resistance of the volume of one bronchia, you have this very known formula. And if you have a Poiseuille flow into a self-similar tree with a scaling factor H from one generation to the next, you have this fractal dimension for the tree, and you can compute the hydrodynamic resistance. It's exactly what Bernard showed in the previous talk. And you have this factor, this geometrical factor. In fact, your resistance for the symmetric tree is a geometrical series with a factor 1 over 2 to the h to the third for the resistance, and with a factor 2h to the third to the 3 for the volume, which means that for the infinite number of generation, you can have this finite and this finite. That's exactly what was shown now. So it seems that here you have the critical optimal value for a finite number of generation. Here you have 10 generation. You have a volume which is not too large and a resistance which is not too large. So it's the good compromise. But oddly enough, the human leg, it's a bit far away from there. So, I can skip this, I can skip this also. This has been shown by Bernard, okay. Okay, so I go directly to that. So, you have this self-similar tree, and you want to evaluate the robustness of the performance. What is the robustness of the performance? Robustness can be defined as a limited sensitivity with respect against external or internal fluctuations. Here you have a self-similar tree, which is obtained by a biological growth. And I won't discuss about the growth process. I'm not claiming that I'm describing the growth process. I will describe a physicist growth process, or a mathematician growth process, if you want. But some kind of a model which will induce some variability which can be linked to the biological or physiological variability of the Montesi factor. So instead of having this perfectly symmetric and self-similar tree, what we are going to do is to try to build this kind of tree, but each time we branch, somehow we make the scaling factor fluctuate around this symmetric structure. So here you have larger here, smaller here, larger here, smaller here. And how do we induce this growth fluctuation? We start from a branch, and here we decide to split this in H1 and H with two scaling factors, H1 and H2. And if we want this to be symmetric, if one is larger than the average H that we have in the symmetric tree, the other will be smaller. So we'll keep a correlation relation between H1 and H2 to express the fact that in fact they correspond to the average on a symmetric tree, and so on and so on. So the scaling for example, the third generation here will be obtained by multiplying the scaling at each generation. So H1 and H2 are not independent but correlated variables. So the kind of law, stochastic law, that we will apply to this kind of structure is this one, at each bifurcation, what we are going to do is to take two independent Gaussian variables, and two independent doesn't mean H1 and H2, because if you do that, you say that, for example, you can have two very large branch or two very small branch, and usually it's not the way it happens. When you have a larger one, you have a smaller one. So what you choose is one of the two, for example, H1, and after, pose as another variable that we can almost fix for some case as a Dirac. That means that a fixed value, this variable. Why this variable? It's because H1 and H2 are the ratio between, for example, the diameter of the mother branch and the diameter of the daughter branch. And if you express this relation with diameters, what you find is some kind of generalized Murray's law. So choosing H1 and, for example, having an S variable, which is a stochastic variable, but if you take a Dirac, S equal 1 corresponds exactly to the Murray's law. If you take a Dirac, which is larger than 1, it's a generalized Murray's law. That means you will make larger tube. And you can also make this S fluctuate. But this S will fluctuate less than H1. Means that this induces a strong correlation between H1 and H2. And for a symmetric branching tree, you can have, what you get is H is related to S with this relation to find back the fact that for the magic number 2^-3 for H, you come back to the S, so the Murray's law. So now, what do we have to compute? We have to compute the resistance of this tree. So here you start from a bronchial of resistance R0, and here you say that this tree, subtree, will have a resistance R1 and the other R2. So this is not too difficult. And the total resistance of the tree is there. But there is one thing that you can notice, is that if you, let's assume that you have an infinite tree here. If you blow up this tree, you come, and with a factor 1 over H1, you come back to another example of this tree. So each of these subtree are an example of this large tree, but with a scaling factor H1 and H2. So you can write this equation as R replacing R1 and R1 and R2 by this expression, where these two resistances are the resistance of this tree blown by a scaling factor 1 over H1. Means exact representation of the same global tree. And if you don't have an infinite tree, here you will have a tree of n plus 1 generation, and here are trees of n generation. So basically what this relation tells you is how you go from variables of tree of n generation to the distribution of variables of resistance of the tree to n plus 1 generation. But this is a formula for the resistance. The formula for the distribution, the probability distribution of this resistance are much more complicated. If you have, for example, if you have two stochastic variables and you want to have the probability distribution for only the sum, you have to make a convolution product of the distribution. And if it's a multiplication or you divide, it's even more complicated. And if you want to write down the distribution, what would be the stable distribution of this formula to compute the stable distribution of the tree with infinite number of branching, that would be awful. At least I cannot do it. So since I can't do it because it's too complicated, I remember that I am a physicist. So I know that I can make an easier computation, that I can and obtain a result, and pretend that it gives exactly the same result that I wanted to obtain with this complicated formula. So it's exactly what I'm going to do. I will put a very much simpler frame and try to compute something about the distribution of resistance induced by this kind of formula. So the frame will be the frame of the Gaussian fluctuation, and we assume that the fluctuation remains small compared to the mean values. So what you are looking at, we are going to look at resistance with small Gaussian fluctuation around the average value, and look how these fluctuations are transferred from the distribution of n generation to the distribution of to n plus 1 generation. So to do that, we have still to have to be able to compute the modification of the mean value and the standard deviation when you make a change of variable around the average value of a Gaussian. So these are the set of formula. The average value of a function of a variable which is Gaussian is approximately the same function applied to the average. And for the standard deviation, you multiply the standard deviation by the derivative of the chain of the function. That's only the only thing that you have to do, and we compute around small fluctuation around the Gaussian distribution. So you have the standard deviation for n plus one generation of the tree, and you start, you simply do the math with this very simple toolbox of the Gaussian approximation. So the mean value of the sum, and I will spare you the exact computation. That's not difficult, that's no more difficult, it's simply tedious. So we can spare it, but we can compute the average value, the mean value of the sum, the standard deviation, the square of the standard deviation of the sum. And here, we will assume that we have independent variable. And at the end, what are left are only the average value of the S distribution and the standard deviation and the average value of the distribution with only n generation. So this, in fact, is the square of sigma n. R prime is the resistance, the standard R prime is the distribution of resistance for the n generation, and here you have n plus one generation. So the n formula is this one that you can simplify and write down like this. And this is very interesting. That is rather small. This is the fluctuation of our generalized S parameter. Means that for a Dirac, it will be zero. And this is around one. So this term in general is small. But what is very interesting is that you see that in this Gaussian approximation, the fluctuations are amplified from generation one to generation n to generation n plus one. They propagate and they are geometrically amplified by this factor. That means that, and this factor is what? Is 3/2 times the average value of this S. In the Murray-S law, this value was one. So that means that the fluctuation only can remain small within this Gaussian approximation if S is smaller than 3/2, the square root of 3/2. For S equal 1, for the Murray-S law, for example, means that fluctuate if you start with a tree, you make it grow like this, and you make fluctuations around the perfect symmetric branching, any type of fluctuation, as small as they can be, will increase geometrically, and we end up with explosion in a finite number of generation, that we go out of the Gaussian, that I do not claim that it will become, it's an exact, because it's only the Gaussian approximation. The only thing that it tells you that you cannot stay within the Gaussian approximation for this value. And this S equal, this limit S equal square root of 3/2 correspond to average value, which is S over 2 to the power 1/3, which is this 3/8 to the power 1/6. If you compute this value, it's about 1.85. So it means that if you have a tree and it's no more than 0.79, it means that if you grow a tree and you make fluctuation of the scaling factor, even around the symmetric tree at, let's say, 0.8, a scaling factor of 0.8, the fluctuation that you will induce in the total hydrodynamic resistance will increase geometrically with the number of generation. So you are not able to ensure the performance of the system you are building. If you want the fluctuation to stay finite, you have to grow it with this kind of scaling factor. So the 0.79 now is within a region where you, in fact, and this is due to the multiplicative process of the resistance. The multiplicative process of the resistance, because if you fluctuate and you have a small pipe, all the tree under is under a small pipe. It's exactly due to the very typical tree-like structure of our system. So It means that you will have patchiness of the flux distribution, and this is represented. You can represent the in 2D the patchiness of any dichotomous tree by making a map on this kind of structure. So you can represent geometrically by a region of different color the flux or within each region with this kind of map. If you do that for various value of s equal 1 or s equal 1.5, here you will see the same kind of patchiness but with not the same flux. That means that the tree structure will always induce patchiness in your system, whether you are in a region with where fluctuation can be very large or in a region where the fluctuation can remain small. The flux distribution is inherently patchy. But if you compute the resistance, and this is the distribution of resistance computed on a very large number, 10,000 of 10 generation tree, for two values of this average S. If you are at S equal 1.5, obviously you will have a smaller resistance than here. But look here, the resistance, they range from 4 to 6, less than 6. You have almost one third of the value you fluctuate of plus or minus 20% or 15%. Here, they range from 8 to 16. That means that your system can build fluctuation, and it's only for a 10 generation tree. That means that your system can easily build either a tree with this resistance or a tree with a resistance which is the double. That means, and a factor of 2 is dramatic for the hydrodynamic resistance. That means that only for a 10 generation tree, you cannot rely on this growth process with this parameter to make you a performing structure. It is too sensitive to fluctuations. So we have a new, and here is the fluctuation against this S number. So now with here was the magic, but now the magic is that, so the volume was finite for H smaller than that, but is for the infinite self-similar tree, but the volume is infinite for H larger than this value. But now the resistance was infinite here and finite here, but now the fluctuation are infinite here and here. So there is no good tree, not even marginally. So what you will have to do is choose one of the constraints. And it seems that in the intermediate bronchial tree, the constraint that has been chosen is rather here. Okay. So this was for the the fluctuation of the performance of the resistance. How much time do I have? Let's
see. Still 25 minutes.
25 minutes. So now I will go to describe also another constraint that can be applied on the structure. Your structure, you don't want particles to enter until this very large surface of 100 square meter. So here you have a system with a huge number of parameters, and you want the ultimate goal is to understand how particles can be dragged into this hydrodynamic flow into the most distant part of this structure. So yeah, there are hundreds of work on this subject, the subject of transport of particles into the lung, because it is a very sensitive subject, and especially now that we are speaking about nanoparticles and nanovectors, to understand how particles are carried into this flux and to access the end region is a very hot subject, hot topic. So, but usually people are focusing, and the many teams that are working on this subject are focusing in increasing the precision and the accuracy of the description of the lung model. So we went exactly the opposite way. We went the way to understand what in this kind of trees is universal and what is not. Are there any general feature for the deposition into an hydrodynamic tree? So this is a sentence that had been given by a reviewer about this kind of way of thinking. So I'm not sure. We have always a very difficult exchange with some biologists, because if really you think that this is the way biology works, and there is nothing that physics or mathematics can do to understand the biology, then we cannot talk anymore. But it happens several times that you have this kind of reaction. Okay, for the geometry of the structure, so we started from the Weibull's model of the tracheobronchial tree. That means a symmetric model, and with this parameter, this magic parameter. And to try to understand what are the general features of the deposition into a tracheobronchial tree, we went to play with the structure, but play in a very strange manner, by rotating all the angles in a way that are largely non-biological, non-physiological, to see what is really robust in the performance of deposition and capture of this kind of structure. So we played with this kind of degree of, we took four generation tree, means three bifurcations, taking into, there we don't have any more quasi flow, we have full Navier-Stokes equation with inertial effect, rotational flow, secondary flow, everything. And we took several degrees of freedom, the scaling factor, but also the azimuthal angle, the entrance velocity, to see what really drives the system. So this is the technique that we used, meshing, solving the Navier-Stokes equation, current conservation, with boundary, non-slip boundary condition, free outlet, and uniform velocity profile at the entrance, but this plays no role, since very, very quickly you have the parabolic flow that that is established, and with this parameter. So this is the model for the fluid, and once you have solved the fluid, you launch particle. So for example, this is the velocity and pressure map for the single bifurcation for a fluid. So you see that here you have inertial effect, since the fluid is dragged toward the outer boundary of the bifurcation. And what we computed is the capture of the number of particles, for example, escaping the structure. So you compute the flow in any type of structure, you launch particle from the entrance, and you compute the number of particles that can escape the structure. So depending on their diameter, on the Reynolds number, you have very different curves. I won't explain the detail of this. You also can plot this versus the particle diameter and putting the Reynolds number as a curve parameter. But in fact, the real thing that drives the system is the Stokes number of the particle. So the Reynolds number is this ratio. And what is the Stokes number of the particle? Is a number that gives you basically the ratio between the inertia, if by hand waving argument, is the ratio between the inertia and the drag force. Means, is the particle more driven by its inertia, which is the case in large Stokes number, or is it driven by the drag force from the fluid, which is the case in small Stokes number? And you have this relation, for example, for this kind of set of parameters. So you take this curve, and instead of plotting them the number of particles that escape the structure, you plot them against the Stokes number. And then these are for Reynolds number ranging from 1 to almost 3,000. That means that the system is driven by the Stokes number of the particle, whatever the entrance velocity. It seems that it's only the Stokes number of the particle that matters. Here you have some deviation for large Reynolds number, because the fluid starts to have also inertia, and the inertia of the fluid drags the particle toward the boundary. And this drag enhances somehow, for some value of the Stokes number, this deposition. But essentially, the zero order that you have to remember is that is the Stokes number that drives the deposition into the structure, into one bifurcation. Now, we play with the structure. We play with the angle, 45, 70, 90 degrees. No effect at all. The structure, this kind of deposition, is totally independent of the rotation of the azimuthal angle from one generation to the next. Independence between generations. For example, what this means that if we compute the deposition into one bifurcation and we compute after three bifurcation, means the four generation, is it the same? Is this the deposition three times one bifurcation? Yes?
Yeah,
it's
the axis of the structure, or
the branching is in one plane,
yeah.
And the next branching is in another plane,
right.
And you can rotate this.
Right.
So the length is typically 90 degrees.
Okay, it's not the angle between
yeah.
the branches.
No, it's not this angle.
Okay. Yeah.
The angle between the branches did not change.
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but it will change.
Not yet. So. For the Reynolds, for the, and here you compute the probability to escape the structure in the total computation of the tree, and the probability to escape the structure if you multiply three times one bifurcation, almost the same. That means that you are almost the statistically Markov process. And that explains why this angle, this azimuthal angle, is not meaningful. It's because it doesn't change, the bifurcation are almost independent. And they are statistically independent. That doesn't mean for one particle it will be independent. That means if you launch a bunch of particles uniformly distributed, then after the first bifurcation, the particles that have escaped, they are formed also a new bunch of particles rather uniformly distributed, and they try again the new structure. It's not at all a Markov process than the type you can have in the alveolar structure where you have diffusion, where here you have a Markov process for each particle. Here, it's the statistical Markov process, means the population, what you compute about on the population can be computed independently one generation after another. And you can also influence the influence of the vortice factor. There you have a small influence. And in fact, I don't know, I'm not sure, now. I am not sure that in the talk I will speak about this angle, but also there is very few there is a very robust, we can talk about that later. So in fact, the main idea is that for the deposition in this tree, you have a Markov process, even if the scaling factor is inhomogeneous. Here you have taken a three bifurcation tree, and here three scaling, different scaling factors, one after the other. And yet, it's almost the same. So even if you make the scaling factor change, you have this almost statistically independent process. If we do the different scaling factor with different azimuthal angles, also it's the same. So in fact, it means that there is a very simple approximate but intellectual toolbox for the deposition in the tracheobronchial tree. The probability to be captured is 1 minus the probability to escape. And since it's independent at each generation, you multiply the probability to escape at each generation. And if you compute the Stokes number, here the magic comes again. If the Stokes number is computed and with this formula, if you have scaling for D, DI, and scaling for UI, what you find is that the scaling of the Stokes number of the particle is exactly with this 1 over 2 to h to the third. So, and you with the constant emitted homotacy factor, you have an approximate formula for the probability to be captured. And for the homotacy factor, the magic homotacy factor, you have this kind of probability. The Stokes number doesn't change. So, and here is the important message. If you have a tree with constant homotacy factor at this magic number, the Stokes number of the particle won't change from one generation to the next. So essentially, this is a filtering curve for 1B fermentation. If the particle is there, it's not trapped. If it's there, it's trapped versus the Stokes number. And each time you will probe if the particle has escaped with the same probing. So these are the particles trapped at first generation and after a second generation. And if you do that against the Stokes number of the particle, in fact, you probe the same. So at the first generation, you filter the particle. And when they arrive in the second generation, you filter them with the main the same type of filter. So you end up with a total filtering, which is more or less like this. If you have a normative scaling factor which is larger than this 0.79, what you have is that, in fact, the Stokes number decreases at each generation. Means that the entrance is the entrance exam. And after, if you have done that, you're almost sure to continue to go on in your tree because you have very large scaling factor, and so it's easier and easier and easier. The Stokes number will decrease. So in fact, it corresponds, if you plot this against the Stokes number at the entrance of the total tree, it corresponds to, at each generation, shift the filtering to the right. So here, it's the number of particles that are trapped at second and third generation, and very quickly disappears. And you have a total filtering for your infinite tree, which is like this, which looks very much like the filtering of 1 bifurcation. 1 bifurcation is the entrance exam. Now, if you have a smaller than this number, you shift the filtering to the right, to the left. Then each time, new particles that were entrapped in the previous generation are now trapped. So if you it means that if you shrink enough and quickly your tree, what you end up again and again and again, you filter new particles. So at the end, the particles that are filtered are all the particles. An infinite tree with a scaling factor smaller than 0.79 filters all particles. And that has been also observed on a numerical simulation with constricted tree of a small number of generation. I won't enter on the detail of the what we can explain things that are observed, but in very simple terms, in this very simple toolbox. So for this particle deposition, it means that if you want to filter particles, it's exactly the opposite that if you want to have a small resistance. If you want to filter particles, you have to increase the scaling, to decrease the scaling factor lower that means critical value, that is magic value. So for the deposition process, there is some universality in the deposition process. And branching and azimuthal angles play a very limited role. But essentially, you have a critical self-similar tree, which is exactly also this magical tree, for which the process is identical at each generation. Means that a stronger constriction leads to a drastic increase of the capture of particles. Okay. So if you want the particles not to enter, you want something which is reduced. If you want the performance to be good, you want something which is a scaling factor which is large. Denis, how long is it?
Well, 5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay. And now, very quickly, because it's very easy to understand, now the transit time. All the things that I have shown are for stationary process, understood in terms of stationary process. But now, one of the constraints of the tree is that for oxygen molecule to reach the end, the alveolar region, you have 2 seconds at max. If you take a self-similar symmetric hydrodynamic tree and you apply the flux conservation, it gives you that the transit time scales also with this factor, and that was more or less shown in different language by Bernard, scaled with this 2h³ factor. Means that this Murray is this magical tree, if we want to summarize, it's isovolumic, means the same volume at each generation, isoresistive, the same hydrodynamic resistance at each generation, isostokes, the same Stokes number for particle flowing in this tree at each generation, and isochronous, means the same. And there is something that Bernard didn't stress on, but if you observe in nature or in any system, a tree which has this value, this 0.79, how can you say, oh, it's because of the energy dissipation? You see, it has so many properties. It can any of the explanation, or both, or some several at the same time. You cannot tell simply because it fits your constraint that it's because of this constraint that the tree has this shape. It has many properties. So what about the supply of oxygen in the Asean region if for the time? We see immediately for that, that if you want, if we have a tree which is not resistive, you will have a very large transit time. In fact, you can compute it. The typical transit time, you enter with a velocity which is order of 1 meter per second at rest. The length of the initial is of order 10 centimeters. So the transit time through the first branch is 0.1, is of the order of 0.1 seconds. If you are with this magic number, you are isochronous. Means that all the same transit time through each generation. The tracheobronchial tree has 17 generation, 17 times 0.1, 1.7 seconds. And you have to reach the end before 2 seconds. Tricky game. So maybe also that explained why you have this here. If you compute distribution of n, distribution of time to reach the end of the structure for a constant scaling, what you have, and you put fluctuation on your system, what you have is something which is centered on around 1.7, but with a large overlap over 2 seconds. Means that you have, if you plot the distribution of the time to supply, you have some spots that are very large, and if you plot the distribution of volume that are supplied, you have some blank region, means regions that are not supplied at all. If you make a variable scaling, like in this case, something which is very steep at the entrance, very small reduction factor, and smoother and with a larger homotacy factor after, what you have, you shift this to the left. And because at the entrance, you gain a lot of time. And why you gain a lot of time? Because in fact, you reduce drastically the dead space volume, which means the space which is in your bronchial tree. So you reduce this space, so you reduce the time to expel this space, and so for the initial fresh air to reach the end alveolar region. And also this performance is robust against fluctuation. The percentage of acinar surface supply is decreased from 100 to 60% when you put fluctuation. That means if you are at, you have no fluctuation, you have this magical tree, you have 1.7 as an average, exactly for all n bronchial. Means that you will reach all the acinar region. But if you put any fluctuation, you go over 2 seconds for a large number. So it's not robust. Here, it's much more robust with this variable scaling. And also, what I won't enter this because it's something which is different. We can also do the same computation with asymmetric branching tree, which is something which is corresponds to the things that have been measured by Rab in the 76. And show that we cannot recover the fluctuation that we can that have been measured for the bronchial pathway length and for the diameter of the structure. But I won't enter the detail of that. But in fact, I will go directly to the conclusion. And this structure is robust against fluctuation. And also, when you have this patchiness, you can plot this in a volume and make 2D projection of this, and this you can compare it to some kind of real measurement. So this is work in progress, but this kind of idea that we have behind is a measurement of patchiness in the lung. So for this transit time, if you have a constant scaling, it does not allow you to supply the acinar volume within the respiratory cycle if you have any fluctuations. So the variable scaling, this instead of having this constant saying, having something which is very steep at the beginning allows you two things. It allows you to reduce the transit time drastically, and also it allows you to filter the particle at the entrance at the same time. And after, for the intermediate puncture tree, what you will have is the some tree which is with a much larger number of generation, but which is very insensitive to fluctuations. Okay, so the end conclusion of the global talk. So it is the main message, if you consider such a system as an hydrodynamic tree, and especially in the case of a lung, energy dissipation is only one of your concerns. It's not at all your main concern, especially in the case of the lung. So, and the average resistance for, and, but if you have any, this is true for any kind of hydrodynamic tree, if it's built by this kind of growth, the average resistance may be finite, while its fluctuations are infinite. So, you see, you are in a space, multidimensional space with a large number of constraints. If you want the hydrodynamic resistance to be small, you have to have a large scaling factor. If you want to protect it from the, you want to protect the outlet of your tree, you have to have a small scaling factor. If you want to cross your tree very quickly, you have to have a small scaling factor. In fact, you are playing in something which is very complex, and we are back with the biology. We are not playing with one scalar space with energy dissipation. And somehow it's interesting that the lung that we see, the measurement, somehow kind of fit the idea that it's filtering at the entrance, it allows a quick transit time, it lowers the dissipation for the main part of the trees, and it makes something which is on the average works optimally, but optimally for the biology, not optimally for the physicist or for the mathematician.